Wildly wealthy women isn't the only recent decision of the High Court which has tripped the stride of the commercial TV industry. The recent ICE TV decision could, in the long term, undermine the commercial viability of the free-to-air TV model. Mark Davison is a professor of law at Monash University, and he's also special counsel with Knightsbridge Lawyers. He reckons the ICE TV decision has also turned Australia's copyright law upside down.
ICE TV is an organisation which is putting together things called electronic program guides. And basically what this is it's your TV guide in an electronic form, and you have it basically stuck into your digital TV. And the advantage of it is you can just click on the relevant programs referred to in the guide and arrange for your own personal video recorder to record the programs you want to see and no others, and you can then watch them whenever you want to watch them. And there's also another nice little bit to it. There's a 30-second skip button that you can press. And what you do, if you want, is you hit that button when the ads come on, you skip the ads, and so you watch the program you want to watch, and you don't watch any ads. Now, Channel 9 isn't very happy because it's a free-to-air television broadcaster. It makes its money from broadcasting. If you don't watch the ads, it's very hard for them to sell ads. And so they didn't want ICE to be producing and selling these electronic program guides. So the real issue was whether or not Channel 9 had copyright in its program guide, and in particular whether ICE had infringed that copyright by what it did in order to create its own TV program.
How did ICE TV actually go about compiling this electronic guide, which it then sold to subscribers who used it to undermine the free-to-air paradigm, which is so prevalent at the moment?
On the basis of legal advice as to copyright law as it was understood at that time, that is before this decision, what it did was that it tried to, and it seems it succeeded in creating its own program schedule rather than copying Channel 9's. The way it did it was this. It actually had a few of its employees watch Channel 9 television for a very long period of time, and they went through the excruciating process of watching just about every program on Channel 9 and then writing down the name of the program, the time it was on, and so on. They then predicted what the TV program schedule would be for the next week and the week after and so on. Now, of course, there were some variations, but what they did was they found out from guides published by Channel 9 what those variations were, and so they just added in the extra bits that they hadn't been able to work out by their previous watching of the Channel 9 programs. The critical issue before the court was whether or not those extra bits copied from Channel 9's program schedules constituted what's called a substantial part of Channel 9's literary work, namely its TV program schedule.
So the High Court of Australia was asked to decide whether ICE TV's use of the program schedule constituted a breach of Channel 9's copyright. Well, what did they decide?
The amazing thing is that, and I say it's amazing because of previous case law on the issue, they agreed with the first instance judge that ICE had not copied a substantial part of 9's program schedule because they'd only taken these small bits, these slivers of information, as the initial trial judge called them, and that these didn't constitute a substantial part of Channel 9's program schedule. But the even more amazing thing is that the judges clearly suggested that Channel 9 didn't have copyright in the bare information in their program schedule anyway. So, for example, there are clear indications in both judgments of the High Court that ICE is entitled to simply copy the name of the program and the time that it's to be broadcast, and it doesn't have to go through that tortuous process of actually looking at Channel 9 programs and then adding in the extra bits.
So raw data, like what's on and at what time, is not deemed to be a work in which you can have copyright.
That's right. Information per se is not protected by copyright. It's only the expression of information which is protected by copyright, And in the view of the High Court, when you've got a situation where the information can really only be expressed in one way, then that means you're effectively not going to have copyright in that information or the expression of it. So, for example, it's very hard to say anything other than Channel 9 News is on at 6 p.m. And so the information and the expression of the information being one and the same means that there is no copyright protection for that information.
This has presumably pretty huge implications for all sorts of lists and databases.
All sorts of implications. Only a few years ago, the High Court refused to hear an appeal by Desktop Marketing, which had effectively reproduced Telstra's white pages.
They, I think from memory, had hundreds of people in the Philippines copying the white pages, wasn't it? And what did the court find in that case?
Well, the full federal court said that Telstra had copyright in its directory and effectively said it had copyright because of the time and effort involved in simply creating that very large list of names, addresses and so on. Now, the decision in the ICE case clearly indicates that the High Court no longer thinks that the decision in Desktop Marketing was correct. They're effectively inviting people to say, come back to the High Court and have an argument about whether something like a telephone directory, particularly the white pages, actually has copyright in it at all, or any meaningful copyright that would be infringed by a reproduction of the directory.
Clearly this has big implications for the electronic media, for the TV industry. What does this mean more generally for people like Telstra and for all other producers of databases and fixtures and schedules? Who else is affected?
Well, I think just about any document which is really no more than a bare statement of the relevant facts. So we've already discussed, for example, white pages, where it's just an alphabetical list of names with phone numbers. Things like the football fixtures, Collingwood against Essendon at the MCG on the 25th of April. That sort of information. It's very hard to say it any other way. And so if you apply the ICE decision, you're left with the consequence that the AFL really doesn't have any significant copyright in relation to its fixtures. We could take other examples, maybe public transport timetables, all sorts of things. No longer, I think, have copyright protection or any significant copyright protection in this country.
Do those things have any inherent commercial value?
Oh, many of them do. For example, my understanding is that the AFL from time to time takes objection to people who run commercial tipping competitions and uses their fixture list for the purposes of that tipping competition. They're saying, no, you need to provide us with a royalty or some sort of payment or some sort of licence fee in relation to the use of that. Certainly, directories such as the White Pages and the rest have enormous value. People ring up directory and say, what's the number for so-and-so? And they pay for that privilege. Now, it means that competitors can, it seems, create their own directories and have similar services and presumably can undercut the organisation that's invested a fair bit of money in creating the directory in the first place, which then has implications as to, well, what exactly is the incentive for creating this information and publishing it? If you're going to be the first one there, it's going to cost you more to do it than the follower, the next person.
So this decision is quite ground-changing.
Absolutely. There's no doubt that this has significantly reduced the extent of copyright protection formerly thought to be the case in Australia.
Mark Davison, Professor of Law at Monash University and Special Counsel with Knightsbridge Lawyers.